We continue with our coverage on the United States of America's elections, and now we talk about how will the U.S. elections affect the Middle East policy. We're joined on the line by Phyllis Bennis. Phyllis, good day to you and welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
Thank you for joining us. Are you excited about the elections or scared about its outcome?
I'm very worried about the outcome. This is a very frightening time. Where we have an election that itself, the election discourse has been characterized by incredible coarse discourse, horrifying accusations of candidates. But more important than that, more important than the really terrible election process, campaign process, is the outcome. There will be no good outcomes from this election. There are lesser and greater evils, and I think for many people, for probably the majority of voters in this country, people are voting against what they perceive as the greater evil rather than voting enthusiastically for the other. Both of these candidates have popularity levels that are lower than any other mainstream candidates in U.S. history. So this is a very frightening time. We have, on the one hand, if there's a Trump victory, it means a consolidation and enabling, if you will, of a truly fascist movement that has grown up around that campaign that, in my view, really dwarfs the significance of any particular policy that at one moment or another Trump may claim to support. He changes virtually every day. But even if he said some things that did not sound completely crazy, not very many, but a few, we can't rely on those being his real policy, but more important is this movement that has grown up around him. Hillary Clinton represents much less of a danger from the vantage point of a movement of her supporters, and her positions on a number of domestic issues, from labor rights, women's rights, economic justice, the environment, are within the mainstream of the Democratic Party. They're not particularly bad, but her positions on war, her international policy, particularly given her history as Secretary of State, she has really consistently favored policies that put war over diplomacy. So that's a very dangerous outcome as well. So there's no good outcomes of this election. I think everyone will be relieved when it's finally over, but there's not going to be a lot of celebrating.
Yes, in terms of, you know, changing how things are, how will Donald Trump as president change the U.S. stance on the Middle East?
Frankly, nobody knows. He has said a few things that were sort of interesting and challenged the long-standing mainstream consensus. He said at one point that the U.S. should be neutral between Israel and the Palestinians. That's a shocker. But he said that once and never again. And when he went to speak at AIPAC, the largest component of the pro-Israel lobby, his speech was as fawning and as uncritical of Israel, as pro-Israel as anyone else's. So I don't think we can count on the fact that one time he said that the U.S. should be neutral. I think the bottom line is on Israel-Palestine, as well as in Syria, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, we know that he's said a variety of things, none of which are very consistent, and I think there's no doubt that he will continue to rely on militarism as the basis of his policy more than any diplomatic effort. The real problem is we simply don't know in any reliable way what he actually stands for. His policy statements have been eclectic. They've been picked seemingly like bumper stickers. He sees a bumper sticker he likes and, oh, that looks like a good policy. I'll throw that one into a speech. There's no consistency. There's no overarching framework. And, you know, his theme, this notion, we will make America great again, is primarily a domestic call. We will go back to the days when white people were the majority. White people were in power. Men made the decisions. women stayed home, women were there for the enjoyment of men. You know, it's a very racist, misogynistic, backward-looking approach, and that's his call on the domestic side. Internationally, he simply doesn't have a coherent framework.
And then on the other end, Hillary Clinton, if she were to win, what would be different in terms of the Middle East policy?
Well, with Hillary Clinton, unlike with Trump, we have a great deal of information, both because her policy proscriptions through the campaign have been very detailed, but also because we know her history. She was a senator, she was first lady, she was the Secretary of State, and in all of those positions, we can look at her actions and see what she actually does. So on Israel-Palestine, I think it will not be substantively different, because keep in mind, despite the arguments between President Obama and Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, which at times got very bitter with the Obama administration and President Obama himself coming out very strongly against settlement expansion in the occupied West Bank and occupied East Jerusalem, but the strategic relationship with Israel did not reflect anything like a level of tension like that. So the key questions in the U.S.-Israeli relationship: military aid to Israel, which has just been negotiated by President Obama to go up from $30 billion over the next 10 years to now $38 billion, you know, an enormous leap in how much military aid Israel will get that goes directly to the Israeli military. No illusions about this being economic assistance or anything like that. This is straight to the IDF. And in the United Nations, the U.S. has continued to defend Israel and protect it using its veto and its threat of a veto to make sure that no Israeli leaders, military or political, are ever held accountable for potential war crimes. Now, again, President Obama has indicated a few months ago in the context of the latest Israeli announcement of another settlement expansion, he said that we may have to consider reevaluating our position regarding Israel at the United Nations, which would be huge, would be absolutely huge. But we've seen no actual movement towards that, and Hillary Clinton has made clear that she wants the relationship with Israel to be even stronger than it has been over this last 8 years. And what she has said, among other things, is that she would invite Netanyahu to the White House during her first 100 days. So I think that there will be that kind of a political shift away from any pressure on Israel, but the very close strategic relationship will remain unchanged or perhaps become even stronger. On the other Middle Eastern questions, again, war becomes the primary tool in a Clinton administration. In the case of Syria, she has made very clear that she wants a no-fly zone in Syria. It's the one area where she has disagreed directly with President Obama, who has opposed a so-called no-fly zone. And no one has asked her. You know, she was the Secretary of State in 2011 at the time of the Libya crisis. And when that crisis broke and there was a call from some of the European governments for the U.S. to lead a military attack, supposedly a no-fly zone just to protect civilians, and in that context, it was Hillary Clinton, who should have been the diplomat-in-chief, who was supporting the military strike. And opposition to the military strike, very ironically, came from Robert Gates, who was at the time Clinton's counterpart as the head of the U.S. military. He was the Secretary of Defense. He was the one who said, no, we should not have a no-fly zone, because, he said, a no-fly zone starts with going to war. He said the first thing you have to do is take out the anti-aircraft system. So if we set up a no-fly zone in Libya, that means we're going to war with Libya. No one has asked Hillary Clinton, do you think he was wrong? Or are you prepared to go to war with Syria? And what that means now is not only with Syria directly, but with Russia as well. It's an incredibly reckless call, but it is consistent. And the people that Hillary Clinton has talked about putting in office, particularly her likely Secretary of Defense, Michelle Flournoy, has called for even more military engagement. And, you know, I think people in South Africa will remember South Africa was on the UN Security Council at the time of the Libya crisis and voted to support this U.S.-led NATO effort, this military strike. And I know some years later that key people in the South African Foreign Ministry acknowledged they had been wrong. They had been wrong to make that vote. They had believed at the time that it was limited to simply protecting civilians. Many of us said at the time, no, this is not limited to protecting civilians. This is about regime change. And indeed it was. And that, I think, is what we have to look forward to. So it's for that reason, I think, that many people have been saying it's important to vote for Hillary Clinton as a way of making sure that Donald Trump and his movement towards fascism does not come to power. But the day after the election, that means tomorrow, there will be protests, there will be people in the streets saying no to war and escalation.
Yes, there are many angles to this, as you are very deeply outlined in terms of the insight that you've shared in that regard. In terms of, you know, going to the Middle East, which of the two candidates will be welcomed more in the Middle East?
I think it depends, first, on which countries you're talking about, and second, whether you're talking about people or governments. I think that Hillary Clinton would be welcomed like a great hero in Israel, for instance. In Egypt, I think Donald Trump might well be welcomed by President Sisi, but I doubt that he will be welcomed by the population, by the people. And in fact, I think in many parts of the Middle East, you will see that divide between governments and people. So in Iraq, where there is, I think, has been some unease among the Iraqi leadership that U.S. support for their military assaults against ISIS, against others, will not gain the same support that they want. I think they would welcome a Hillary Clinton election. I'm not sure where a future President Trump, if somehow that happened, I'm not sure where he would be welcomed, perhaps by the government in Turkey, but again, not by the people. The same with Egypt. So it varies across the region, but I think the key difference is that there is a wide gap between what governments are hoping for and what people are hoping for.
We appreciate your time on Radio Islam, Phyllis. Thank you very much for chatting to us.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure having you on air. Thank you. Bye.